Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Daily Buddy List. I am your host, Liz, and today's topic is going to be kind of all over the place, but my general guideline is to focus on this past year's Oscar and Academy Awards. So the reason why I say that this is going to be probably all over the place is I would like to talk about not only those that were nominated, but those who were snubbed. Because I feel as though they should be recognized and acknowledged just as much as those who didn't quite make it. And so let's kind of go back a little bit and focus on when typically is the start of the Oscar season. Now, this is something that's kind of debatable towards everybody else, but technically the nominations for the Academy Awards are announced around January. This past one was January 13th, 2020. At 5:18 in the morning. Yes, it is very early, and everybody gets up super early and they're super excited to learn who's nominated and who is picked for what. But usually coming after that shortly is the crushing defeat of the fact that some people get snubbed, very much snubbed. So I want to start off by kind of going over the actual Oscars nomination list. Now, Oscar nomination lists are like the top of the top, the cream to the crop. You know, it's basically just supposed to be the best of the best when it comes to film. Now, I will freely admit, I don't technically know how they're actually, that like basically the rubric of how things are nominated. But I will say a couple of things about something that I heard along the grapevine. First, I want to focus on movies. So Ford versus, like, the top for best picture this year was Ford versus Ferrari, The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Joker, and Little Women, along with The Marriage Story in 1917, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, along with Parasite. Now, the reason why I sounded hesitant on some of those things is because I completely forgot they have expanded Oscar nominations to include more in the category. Now, originally there was, I think, only five top picks for best anything. Any of the nominations was a smaller crowd. So there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 Oscars nominations for Best Picture. That wasn't always so, and I feel like that basically came from a movement that started a couple years back about representation in Hollywood and how a lot of people of certain ethnicities were not being represented. It was basically really, really white. Let's just cut to the chase. It was a white crowd. You know, it was well established, very, you know, established people. And so it wasn't really until people started to stand up and say, hey, where is the representation? Where are the, you know, where's representation for different people that look different? You know, where's the representation for women? Where's the representation for basically anybody that does not look white? Let's just put it that way, as PC as possible. So I think the response from the Academy Award to that particular issue was the fact that they expanded the nomination count to include more options to give more diversity. Now, this is a topic that me and some friends kind of butt heads about the fact that certain people are nominated for certain reasons that are kind of unsaid in previous experiences with the Hollywood elite and the Oscar nominations, the Academy Awards. And coming from somebody from an outside perspective, kind of looking in and wanting to know how these things come to pass. How are these people nominated? How do they get in there? Other than the fact that they basically put themselves up for nomination and the people in the Academy then vote. I'm still unclear about that particular process, but there were times where I felt like people were snubbed and there were times that I felt like people were not represented, which is true, but there's also things, and I feel very weird saying this as basically a female myself, there are arguments about the lack of women being represented for best directing or basically a lot of things in a lot of areas when it comes to actual film. And I remember particularly, I think it was Natalie Portman coming out last year or the year before, and basically kind of dropping a little bit of a mini bomb and saying that all the men nominated in this category, drawing attention to not necessarily who was represented in that category, but the fact that it was all men and there wasn't any women. And so this is a really sticky topic that I think I should probably hold off into another discussion. But there is a little bit of lack of representation for female directors, I will admit that. You know, and there is a lot of lack of representation in all areas when it comes to Academy Awards. Do I think it needs to be fixed? Yes. Do I think it's getting better? Yes, I think it is getting better. And then we've got basically the nominations for actor in a leading role. We had Antonio Banderas in Pain and Glory. We had Leonardo DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I'm a little biased, I will say, for Quentin Tarantino because I've grown up with him as a director. So let's not just be, I'll just leave that there. Adam Driver in Marriage Story. Then we've got Joaquin Phoenix in The Joker. And then we've got Jonathan Pryce. And so when you look at that, that's one, two, three, four, five. That's six nominations in a category for Best Actor, which I think slightly went up from four as well. I know it was a lot smaller originally. So they are improving, but it's still a pretty limited cast. Because when you look at the diversity of those nominated, it's pretty well established that there's a pretty decent variety in that particular category. And then we've got basically the actress in a leading role. We've got Cynthia Erivo and Harriet, who did an amazing job, by the way. Scarlett Johansson in A Marriage Story. Oh gosh, I always mispronounce her name. Saoirse Ronan in Little Women. I'm sorry I butchered her name. Charlize Theron, I will say, was kind of a bit of a shock when I found out that she was nominated. And then I watched the film and I was not shocked anymore because she's amazing in that. And then Renee Zellweger. Now, Renee Zellweger and Judy really came up out of nowhere. I really did. I was very skeptical of this. I didn't really think that she sounded like Judy Garland in the promotional trailers. I didn't really think she kind of really pulled off her acting portrayal. But I wanted to say I gotta chalk that up to the way that they edited the trailers. I really didn't think the trailers really did the movie justice, and I think it would have gotten a more bigger response in the box office if the trailers were edited in a slightly different way. But honestly, I saw the movie and I was greatly impressed with it, I will just say. So let me just go back and take a step back. Usually what I do every year, and I've been doing this for the past 5 years, is I go back and during around the time that they list the nominees for Golden Globes is when I start creating a list of all the films that I think will be potentially nominated for an Academy Award. And I put it down on a really long piece of lined paper and I start kind of ticking off each film that I happen to see that I think has the best chance to be nominated. There's a lot of people that say a lot of people that were nominated for an Academy Award were those that had won or had a successful night basically at the Golden Globes. It's basically a precursor. So once that is said, then I bated breath because this all usually starts around the time of October. Is usually when things become a little bit more established and they're a little bit easier to access and they start to show certain things in different theaters to get at least a little bit easier access for those like me who want to basically watch every film nominated. And what I do is around January, when it was January 13th this year, I make an Oscar watch list. And then hopefully by the time I make this list, I've got maybe half of it already knocked off because I base a lot of the things that I find on Golden Globes are also nominated for Oscars. So if you can start the list early, then do it. That'll add an extra 3 months to your time. And then you hop and you dive in and you try to watch as many films as possible and you find any ways that you can do it. This particular year, I really hit the documentary short films very, very hard. Now, I will give you a tip if you want to know how to watch these particular films and their film festivals. There are small film festivals that you can find. I particularly found the ones that I went to in the San Jose area, and I drove all the way there. It was a couple hours drive to get to that location, and I got to see all the Oscar-nominated documentaries and all of the short film categories. And it was awesome. It was really, really awesome. It was a short documentaries. The longer documentaries you can usually find online. They're usually streaming through bigger services like Amazon Prime and other things like that. But I did find a really hard time finding things online that were shorter, like the shorts, the animated shorts, the short documentaries, all these other things. And so you really have to be mindful and to keep your eyes out on where these things will be actually shown. And so I hunted it down. I found it in San Jose. I drove all the way there. It was like a 3-hour festival, and it was amazing. I got so many of my list just knocked off one by one from that film festival. And they're so emotional and beautifully done. And I'll be honest, the previous lists I've ever done have not incorporated these categories because of the fact that they are so hard to find. And so this year I dedicated it to a friend of mine who had recently passed of breast cancer, and we were really, really close. And one of our bonds was film. I remember we watched Brokeback Mountain together. Yeah. She was, the first time I met her, I had known her because she was an older friend and was friends with my older brother. I knew who she was, but I didn't think she knew who I was. Sorry, I'm going off on a tangent, but I happened to be working at a bar, and she came in on a date with a guy or a gentleman that I had recently just broken up with. So I had a little bit of liquid courage, and I went up to her, and I basically was like, "Hey, how's it going?" And she immediately knew who I was, which made me feel very, very good, because my older brother, little sister dynamic, you're usually the tag along, and their friends don't really want to be your friends. And so I said, "Hey, let's go watch some film." And we were inseparable ever since. And I remember the first time we went to go watch Brokeback Mountain, it wasn't being released in my town because my town's a lot smaller. And it was a limited release because a lot of people in that movie were very, very scared, especially in smaller towns. And so a lot of theaters were not really wanting to pick it up. And so they were kind of hesitant on where to show this film, how much, you know, people were going to actually want to be, you know, clamoring to see it. And so we drove all the way to Fresno, California, which was a bit of a drive, to watch this film. And I just remember we've been inseparable ever since. And so that was our go-to, was we would, I remember for a good year, we went and saw 2 to 3 movies a week. We were that obsessed with film. And so it was pretty hard when we lost her. And so the first thing I did was I dedicated my Oscar list this year to her, and I was insistent that I was going to watch every single one of these films. And so we ended up getting the closest I've ever gotten. I was one film away, and it was one particular film that I unfortunately could not watch because of the fact that it was very hard to find and that it wasn't going to be released until the following month. Actually, not even that. It was a week afterwards that it was supposed to come out, and I wasn't able to see it. So I was pretty distraught about it. I was really, really kind of distraught about it. So it took me a while to kind of recuperate and be okay with the fact that, you know, one film is close enough. And the crazy thing is I still haven't been able to find access to this film, which drives me a little crazy. But, you know, that's what usually happens. But, I mean, the documentary features, American Factory, The Cave, The Edge of Democracy, for Salma was such a good film. They're just amazing. You know, there's the documentary short films. In the Absence was talks about a cruise liner that had basically sank with a bunch of children on board. I don't want to go into it. It just really is very, very upsetting. But it was that. But looking back at it, there are some films that I felt that were snubbed that I felt as though deserved places in the nominations. Perfect example, I felt as though The Irishman, even though it was a great movie, was built basically on the power of the actor's name and the actual director's name. So it was Martin Scorsese, and it also starred Joe Pesci, Al Pacino, and Robert De Niro. And it was called The Irishman, which is ironic because, to my knowledge, Robert De Niro is Irish. But maybe I missed that point. I don't know. I haven't seen the movie in a while, and it was one that I was kind of just let down by. With this caliber of actors and directors, you would think that it would be just a blow out of the water kind of movie. But what a lot of critics panned it for was the fact that it was a really basically a slow running movie, which isn't a bad thing because there are awesome movies that are slow running to start. But the fact that a lot of it was panned for the digital editing of their facial features because Robert De Niro's character had to play his character over a course of many years. And with all this deep fake technology happening, and there's been some mock-ups which kind of blew me out of the water of how it should have looked by amateur, you know, graphic designers coming in and just really kind of blowing it out of the water. Yeah, I felt as though Adam Sandler's movie, why am I blanking on this? I adored him in that movie. Half Cut Gems, I think is what it was called. And it was just absolutely amazing. I mean, this movie is amazing. And I was devastated to find out that he was not nominated in the category. And I was like, when you're putting the two together, you're thinking to yourself, well, I honestly think this person really does deserve this position. It's a Susan Lucci syndrome, you know, kind of thing. Uncut Gems. I'm so sorry. It's called Uncut Gems, where Adam Sandler basically plays a jewelry store owner, and deals within basically a lot of high-priced items, and then antics ensue because he's addicted to certain types of gambling on basketball. Basically loses a lot of money, owes money to people. He's basically doing Ponzi scheme-esque kind of activities to rob Peter to pay Paul. And I really don't want to tell you the ending, but all I've got to say is that just when you think this character is redeemable, something horrible happens and you just kind of let down. But yet it still comes full circle for other characters, so it makes it somewhat okay. And it was just this amazing roller coaster ride, and where he just does this awesome job. It shows this depth as an actor that you don't see him in a lot of movies, because when you think of Adam Sandler, you're thinking of Billy Madison and all these other movies that he, you know, Mr. Deeds, these films that he does with all of his friends that are more comedy, grown-ups. And then he puts this movie out that just shows this total other side of him. That's depth, you know? We know that Robert De Niro and Al Pacino and all these amazing actors, you know, and and Joe Pesci, we know that they're good actors. And so I felt as though that they rested on their laurels on the fact that, hey, you know, it's just this triple threat. We're just going to be totally awesome. And the writing was excellent in the film. And so you're just kind of waiting for the pacing to come up, and it just really made me mad. But it was kind of like a Sophie's choice. And I know it had to be difficult for people to pick between the two. It's like, who do we pick? Do we pick this, you know, coming up? So I was just kind of scratching my head, and I'm like, I don't really know how to value this. Like, what type of value system do they put? Do they have a grading rubric on movies to, like, decipher which one's technically better than the other? Or is it basically based on just aesthetic appeal? You know, are you going to have a certain bias because you don't really like Adam Sandler movies, so therefore you don't want Adam Sandler to succeed in some way? You know, it's pretty silly. And so I was reading an article, and I'm kicking myself right now. I want to say it was Vanity Fair or some entertainment, prestigious entertainment article that was basically interviewing kind of nonchalantly a particular person on the Academy that they didn't really divulge their name because they wanted, I ruin this word every time, anonymity. They didn't want to know, they didn't want to divulge who the person actually was. And so they asked this person, who I'm assuming was a guy, because of the way that they were talking and structure-wise in the grammar of the article. And he was basically saying, and this will probably boil your blood just as much as it does mine, that since Adam Sandler is predominantly a comedian and does funny movies, that they take his movies not so seriously. They don't take him seriously as an actor, even though he performs an amazing actor. Like, they overlook him. Like, oh yes, they even talked about, well, how could you say that when he's done other films that have obviously been very successful and have not been comedies, like Punch Drunk Love, for example. And I'm sitting there going, yes, yes. Like, come on. And then you look back and you look at this portrayal of him in this movie and this depth that he shows. And yes, there are characteristics that he pulls in from certain things. And you can tell it's, you know, there are some points where you're like, is he going over the top? And you're like, no, he's not. Because that's the character he's playing. He embodies the person he's supposed to be. And so this was my number one biggest snub, I would say, for the entire thing. I was really, really, really pissed off when I found out that he was not nominated in the film. It just really, and the film itself, it should have been nominated for Best Film, and it should have been nominated for Best Actor. He should have been in that, and he should have gotten at least those nominations. And I was severely pissed when he wasn't nominated for that. It just really, and when he did not get the nomination, it just kind of was a little soul crushing, but he took it really, really well. So just, I mean, if you want to see a good example of a very decent human being, you look at him at Adam Sandler. Yeah, he did put a little snubs in there, or talks about the snubs and little jokes, and he's like, well, you know, if I don't get nominated for an Oscar, he's going to go back to Netflix and make a very horrible Netflix movie or show. Because a lot of the things that were being said is he doesn't do big projects anymore. He doesn't do these in-depth films that are high caliber, Oscar nominated. I'm sorry, there are films out there that I've seen, horror movie films, you know, like the movie last year, Get Out. I was so shocked and utterly stunned that they actually nominated that movie, because it is a psychological thriller, but to me, it's a horror film. And the fact that they nominated him, and rightfully frickin' so, I want to cuss, but I'm not going to, you know, that he got the credit that he deserved for that film. But there are comedies, and there are, you know, not everything that needs to be nominated for an Academy Award needs to be this humongous thriller, dramatic experience. There can be things that could be nominated for Best Picture that are not going to be, you know, Peanut Butter Falcon, for example. You know, what were the accolades for that? You know, Shia LaBeouf, he did an amazing job in that, you know. And then what happened? He comes out and, you know, to present a nomination, and then everybody jumps on him because they feel like he wasn't treating his friend, who was also in the movie as well, the same way. Like, oh, you're talking down, because the other character in the movie has Down syndrome. And so I just was really upset at some of the things that happened. I just, you know, just kind of bums me out, you know. Zach Gutzagen, who plays Zach in the film, and the Shia LaBeouf plays Tyler, and Dakota Johnson plays Eleanor. And it's just a very good movie. And when I say good, I mean like good. Like, fills your soul kind of good. You know? And then, and Shia does this amazing job. And Zach, I mean, absolutely stunning. You know, don't tell me anybody with a disability cannot make it in Hollywood, because I will tell you that is complete BS. Because he does an amazing job. You know, I felt that was really kind of not taken in as much and as well as it probably should have been. I don't know if maybe that was looked over because it was later on in the year and it didn't make the cutoff. Maybe it will be next time. But I mean, the movie came out August of 2019, so it has every opportunity to be nominated for a film. I mean, it's just these types of movies that I feel like are just totally being overlooked. So you go in and you're thinking to yourself, okay, you know, I'm not going to be upset. I'm not going to be upset. But then you just end up being like totally upset. You know, there was, I want to say 2018 was a year that there was a lot of kind of hubbub, I would say, because of the fact that there were some people that felt as though they did not, I don't know, that women should have been basically given a bigger role. It was right in the throes of the Me Too movement, and that women being represented as equal and getting equal representation in film and basically Hollywood in general, which is completely true. I mean, you look at these, and this is something that for me is a little controversial stance that I have on it, is the fact that when you think about people getting paid to do the same things, equality wise, a lot of times, a lot of my friends argue with me that if a man and a woman are being in a film, like if there's an actor and an actress that are doing a film, even a film for a movie, for a film for television, that if they are doing the same amount of work, they should get equal pay. I understand that. And that's some of the things that people are fighting about. But when I look at it, I look at it differently, at the fact that, well, I don't seem to understand, you know, if people are getting top billing, you know, if they're bringing more to the movie because of the clout and what they represent and basically their accessibility, or not accessibility, but recognize, what's the word I'm thinking of? Basically bringing their celebrity status to the film. I don't know how any other way to say it. If this person's more popular, you know, they're really hot right now and they want to get into a film and they get more pay. I mean, what's the way that's established and set up? Because you look, for example, what is it? It's actually a television show. It's one of my favorite. It's Grace and Frankie. And you've got Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda. And one of the problems that they had in the first season of that was the fact that Sam Worthington and, why am I blanking on his name right now? Him and Martin Sheen. Even though they carried more time on screen and they were the actual title of the show, they were the main characters, they came to find out that the two gentlemen on the show were getting paid more than Jane and Lily. And so it was this big, huge, huge problem. And they ended up having to go back and reconcile and redo contracts to get them to come back, which is rightfully so. And here's the thing. Yes, they're the top tier. They have their names on the project. They're the basically predominant characters on the show. I will say this, Martin Sheen and Sam Worthington, they did an absolutely amazing job. And they did in the first season not have as much time as the two female leads, but they did. They did carry a substantial amount in the first season. So I was a little upset that people, I'm sorry, it's not Sam Worthington, Sam Waterston. I deeply apologize. But this show particularly first aired in 2015, and that was right around the time that this whole Me Too movement basically started. I don't know why this whole podcast has just turned into the Me Too movement. which I'm not going to go on about. But anyways, so what is in a resume? That's what it boils down to, right? Okay, you're the casting director and you're casting the show. You want this show to be successful. So you're going to try to get the best of the best. You're going to go into these characters knowing that you're going to want the show to draw people in. So you cast the best of the best. Lily Tomlin, Jane Fonda, June Diane Raphael, Sam Waterston, Martin Sheen, Brooklyn Decker. You know, that's an awesome cast. But there are people on that cast that have a longer resume than other people. You know, does that mean that this person should get paid more? When you're looking at it as a job, and you're looking at it as a typical 9-to-5 job, you have two people, let's say a man and a woman, going in for a position. It's the same position, and they both get hired. But they're both doing the same amount of work. They're both hired at the same time. But say, for example, the woman has less experience in that field. Say she was only working in the field for 5 years, while the gentleman has been working in the field for 25. Should the gentleman get paid more because he has more experience than the female, even though they're both going to be doing the exact same amount of work and they were hired at the exact same amount of time? It's just this weird kind of messed up scenario. And it's kind of like that when I think about film. So you're casting this film, or you're casting this movie or television or whatever show you're casting, and you're trying to make sure that you get the best in there. And it's unfortunate that sometimes they throw in somebody who's really hot, and I'm doing air quotes, hot for them for that moment, you know, just to try to get a little bit of attention their way, when they could be looking at these other struggling actors trying to break into the industry who might not have as much experience but are better for the part. You know, how many movies can we name off the top of the list that we know came with basically a newcomer that ended up being successful? So let's take a look. This has totally been hijacked into another conversation. And don't say I didn't warn you, because this is going all over the place. But let's go ahead and look at Star Wars, the most recent Star Wars movie. So there could have been a lot of people in the new Star Wars movie that could have done a great job. You know, but there are a lot of people that were in the new franchise that just came out that were not really well known as much as like other actors that could have been the part. Let's see the last one, The Rise of Skywalker. So when you're looking at The Rise of Skywalker, that was in the first one. Actually, that was the second one, which was absolutely amazing, by the way. It was December of 2019. Daisy Ridley. So Daisy Ridley has been working in the industry and has done a lot of film. You know, she was in a lot of stuff that was probably a little bit not as mainstream. She was in Peter Rabbit, The Inbetweeners. Nothing really was very substantially on the mark. She was also in The Murder on the Orient Express back in 2017. But really her breakout moment was basically Star Wars, the Star Wars trilogy. Star Wars Last Jedi, The Force, and then Rise of Skywalker. So she basically establishes herself as basically a leading character. So now she's kind of put herself on the mark. So therefore her value gets risen. But yet you don't really look at the fact that all the movies and shows and the hard work that she put in before she got there, that's really not super, super established, right? So then you look at Oscar Isaac, who plays Poe. Kind of the same thing with him. He had a little bit more success in the beginning, and he actually has a bigger resume before this film came out, because he was really what first put him on my radar was, oh my gosh, he was in The Addams Family. I can't remember that. He was in Drive. He was in Suburbicon. He's just been in a lot of really, really awesome stuff. I really loved him at Eternity's Gate with Willem Dafoe when it talked about Vincent Van Gogh. That movie was stunning, by the way. But the one that really got me, Life Itself was a really great movie. I trying to think of why. Oh, Inside Llewyn Davis back in 2013. He actually got nominated, and I think he might have won that one. I think he won an Academy Award for that, either that or a Golden Globe. But that was really the one that, for me, kind of set him as like a, this guy's kind of made it kind of thing. It was about a movie back in 1961 about a New York folk singer at a crossroads, basically, in his life. And it's basically come to terms with what he wants to do in the future, how he wants to live. And it's got these ups and downs. It's just a lovely story. It's got Carey Mulligan in it, Adam Driver, who I absolutely adore. But what really puts a value on an actor? Like, what should put a value on an actor? Should it be how many movies they've done in the past? Because there are a lot of actors out there that have done literally, like, maybe 100 films, but never really made it into a top tier. So they'd be, like, on the D list. You know, what makes that person less substantial than somebody who's done maybe 5 films, but is now making like $5 to $20 million a film? You know, it's because of the success of the film, but you don't know how successful it'll be. So we've got all these other people trying to struggle to get into the industry. It's just a really, really sad, sad aspect of that part of life. But then once you work really, really hard and get that reward for all the hard work that you've got, I mean, honestly, it really comes down to, from my perspective, is if you're happy with what you're doing. I mean, okay, that leads me into a segue. So in the last Oscar nominations for the 2021, there was a lovely little film. Sorry, 2019, 2020. There was a lovely little film by the name of The Lighthouse. And it starred Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe. And this was something on the list, and I had to knock it out because if I was going to keep on my pacing, I really, really had to make sure that I was really on the ball. And so I ended up putting it on one of my devices as I was being driven home from basically watching the documentaries in San Jose. So I went to San Jose, I watched all these documentaries, and I thought to myself, well, I've got this a couple hours to drive home, might as well put on a movie. And so this movie, I was kind of low on the list. It was something that I've never seen any trailers for. Along with Parasite came out of nowhere. Along with Marriage Story was something that I had seen on, I think, Netflix a million times, and I never stopped to watch it until it was nominated for an Oscar. And so I was kind of hesitant on if I wanted to watch it. And so I thought to myself, you know what? It's black and white. This is going to be one of those existential movies that I don't really understand. But man, was I completely blown away. I watched this film, and I remember at the end of this film, I became very, very angry because I thought to myself, out of all of this brilliant acting in this movie, Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson did not get nominated in any of these categories. And I've seen everything that's been nominated, everything, almost everything by this time, except for one film. And I just got super pissed because the only way you can argue about if a movie is great or if it sucks, and if you have an opinion on something, is if you've watched it. So I wasn't going to diss any other movie until I had seen pretty much everything. And so I hadn't seen everything at the time that this movie actually came up. But I was pretty upset. And so I thought to myself, you know what, Liz, just wait. Just wait until you get back and you watch all the other films, and then you'll have an actual place to sit and reevaluate, because reevaluating is important as a teacher. You need to reevaluate what makes these movies so special. You got to evaluate the writing, you got to evaluate the cinematography, you got to evaluate the directing, you've got to evaluate the acting. You know, everything has got to come together to make a movie strong. if one part of it is weak, it could totally ruin a film. I mean, completely. Let's look at, I know this is going to be a contentious topic, but Justice League, the last Justice League movie came out. They just announced that that they're going to be showing the Zack Snyder version cut of the film. Because, like, for example, me and my husband, I remember sitting there in the film and just going, what did they do to this movie? It seemed like it was very scatterbrained. It was mishmashed together and the storyline didn't work, but it looked like it tried. Like, there was something about it that made you think to yourself, like, something got left out. And then you come to find out after a long period of time what it actually was. I mean, I haven't seen the recut yet, but I hear it's really good. And it was how basically the movie was intended to be seen, which was just absolutely amazing. You know, I'm assuming, I haven't seen it yet, but I've been hearing good things. But it really does make you kind of think back, and you're thinking to yourself, if all these things don't come together, then it's going to be really, really difficult how do you evaluate this? It all comes down to, do you like it? Did you hate it? What about it was good? I don't know. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Parasite. These are great movies. These are excellent movies. And so you're sitting here kind of just left like, I don't know how to evaluate. Anyway, so The Lighthouse was based upon the fact that there is a gentleman that's played by Willem Dafoe, who is originally the lighthouse keeper on this little rocky island out in the middle of nowhere. And it's not really well established, like, what is going on. Like, it's a very, very psychological movie, and it makes you wonder, like, every single time, like, what am I supposed to be watching? Is this reality? Am I supposed to understand what they're talking about? Is this real? And so what ends up happening is that Willem Dafoe's character has been on this island for a very, very, very long time. And so you're kind of left sitting there going, man, that guy's probably just itching to get off this island. And then he's being replaced by a gentleman played by Robert Pattinson. It's a young buck that comes on because he was promised a good deal of money to come out and basically take over this position for a short period of time to give the other guy basically an R&R. And it makes it, it's just the weird, it's so weird. This movie is weird and awesome and weird in all of the right ways. And so you've got them on this island and you're thinking to yourself, okay, he's being trained into how to prepare and run this lighthouse when Willem Dafoe leaves or retires. It's very back and forth. You really don't know what is the actual truth. And then all of a sudden things start to get a little strange. So you start to think, is Willem Dafoe trying to get Robert Pattinson to think that he's crazy? And then Robert Pattinson's character starts hearing the siren calls of mermaids, and there's this really very strange sexual tension and nature between both of them, because they're like, you don't really know how long they've been on the island. Are they both going insane and crazy? They get drunk, they party together, they almost make out. It's just the weirdest thing. But Willem Dafoe's character flat out says, you're never allowed to go to the lighthouse. You can't go there. Only I can go there. And it's supposed to be two lighthouse keepers try to maintain their sanity while living on a remote and mysterious New England island in the 1890s. So it's a period piece. And so they're living kind of in poverty, not technically in poverty. It's just, you know, not a lot of food rations. They were given a certain amount of food that they were supposed to live to survive on the whole time that they're there. So you're assuming that once they start running out of food, that they've been there for a long period of time. And then you're thinking that somebody's supposed to be coming to pick up Robert Pattinson's character. It's just crazy. So he plays, Robert plays Thomas Howard. And then Willem Dafoe plays Thomas Wake. So when you think about it, the fact that the characters have the first two first names, are they split personalities? Maybe Willem Dafoe's looking at Robert Pattinson's character as a younger version of himself. It's just really weird. You know, it ends up Robert Pattinson goes crazy and ends up killing Thomas Wake. And just because he wants to go to the top of this lighthouse, he's been denied this opportunity, he sneaks up there and he sees Willem Dafoe's character, Thomas, making love to some really weird, like, creature. And you're thinking, is it a mermaid? Is it, like, some really weird squid-like creature? It's just all over bonkers. It's just bonkers. And he ends up basically killing Thomas Wake, just so he can take over the lighthouse to get up on the top. And the very last shot, and it's so beautifully done because it's in this really dark contrast between the darkness and the highlights. So you could definitely tell whatever filter that they used, they really wanted it to be super dark with a blast of a lot of probably bright lights to get the shadow effect that they got. It's just a stunning, stunning film to actually visually watch. And the last shot is basically Robert Pattinson flinging open the doors to the lighthouse and just staring at the light and slowly driving and diving into this madness. And it's just freaking crazy. It's literally, it's him going crazy. It's absolutely batty. But once you watch this film, you then start to wonder, how come this film got nominated for something really, really, I don't know. He got nominated for cinematography. It also got nominated. It was nominated for Best Supporting Actor, Willem Dafoe, and the Critics' Choice Award 2020. Independent Spirit Award actually went to Robert Pattinson in the film, and the Independent Spirit Award for Best Directing went to Robert Eggers, who was the director of the film. So they got their you know, acknowledgement. But they really deserve the acknowledgement by the Academy. It was such a freaking good film, I cannot tell you. And this doesn't always just happen to, like, little films. Like, I remember Roma last year. It was a smaller film, and it just kind of blew everybody else out of the water. It was a 2018 drama. Basically, Cleo is one of two domestic workers that helped Antonio and Sophia take care of their four children. So she was basically a child care provider for this family in Mexico City in the 1970s. And then all these other things arise. Like, you end up finding out that one of them becomes pregnant, and then the father doesn't want to be the father. It's really, really good. So it won Best International Film Festival film, and it also won Best Directing at the Academy Awards that year. But a lot of people were really upset at the fact that they felt as though it shouldn't have been nominated because of the fact that it was primarily a streaming service movie. Like, that supposedly didn't qualify to be nominated for an Academy Award. Like, Alfonso Cuarón won a Best International Feature. He took the award, or the whole film took the award. They got it for best. He also won best director. It swept it. It won best cinematography for the same gentleman. It won a Golden Lion. It won a BAFTA, Critics' Choice Award, Golden Globe, another Critics' Choice Award for Best Picture. I mean, this thing literally swept Critics' Choice Award, Independent Spirit Award, Satellite Award, like two Satellite Awards, like a couple BAFTA awards, you name it. This movie literally swept it. And all I had to do was play in just a couple of movie theaters to become qualified to be nominated an Academy Award. And that's what pissed off a lot of directors, because they felt as though it didn't do its due diligence. It didn't make it to the big screen, on enough big screens to be. It's like, no. Because the quality of work that's being posted to streaming services like Netflix and Hulu and all these other places, they are very, their quality is getting really, really good. Like Marriage Story, for example. Marriage Story was nominated for a Academy Award this past year. And it was, it had Adam Driver in it, along with an excellent portrayal by Scarlett Johansson about basically a stage director and his co-star wife struggling basically to make a marriage work. And it was initially released in November 15th of 2019, and it won it won a lot of awards. It won an Academy Award for Best Actress in Support for Laura Dean. Scarlett Johansson got an Independent, along with Adam Driver and Laura Dern, all got Independent Spirit Awards. Laura Dean got a Critics' Choice Award. I will say this, though. As much as I did like Laura Dean's character, portrayal of her character, even though I hated her character because she was a bitch, excuse my language, I felt as though she did not deserve the Academy Award over who was nominated. I do feel as though she did have probably more depth. Actually, I don't think she did win that, did she? No, she did, because Kathy Bates ended up winning, I think, the Best Actress category. But it was a beautiful story, and there's this one beautiful monologue between both of their characters, Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson, talking about how they hate each other. And Adam Driver's that monologue alone, it was a Sophie's Choice between him and it was a Sophie's Choice between him and Brad Pitt. It was really, really hard, but honestly, it just, everything just wraps up to what really qualifies as good. How are these pictures being nominated? And that's what I would like to know. Going back to that one article that I read about this gentleman who is an actual on the Academy, talking about how he nominates films. He basically flat out said that he was not going to nominate Hustlers. Excuse me, because Jennifer Lopez wasn't an actress. She's done tons of films, none of them really that deep. You know, her portrayal in The Cell, though, absolutely good. I mean, still one of my favorite movies of all. I mean, not my top 10, but still highly up there. And I technically haven't seen Hustlers, but I've seen bits and parts of it. But for this gentleman to basically say that she didn't deserve a nomination and the movie didn't deserve a nomination because of the fact that her character, she's a dancer, she's a singer, how dare she try to be an actress even though she's already established herself as an actress, like she didn't deserve it. I'm like, I'm sorry, but did you see all the training and the work that she did to learn how to pole dance for that movie? I mean, she really did her due diligence in being that character. She embraced that character. I have only seen bits and pieces of the movie. I haven't seen all of it. And I'll be completely honest with you, I am not a huge Jennifer Lopez fan. I'm not. That's just personal preference for mine. But how dare this guy say that she is not an actress and that her movies just do not deserve an award because of the fact that she is also a well-renowned singer and dancer. She started out as a fly girl on A Living Color and worked her way from the bottom. She's Jenny on the Block. I'm sorry, but that just boggles. That's the epitome of entitlement. And that's what makes me think that maybe we need to start reevaluating the people who are running the Academy Awards and who is on the Academy. Because I really do think that there should be some type of guidelines. And maybe there is, and I just don't know. Maybe that's something I need to research to make myself a little bit more educated on the topic. But I really, really think that if people are on the Academy with that kind of attitude about film and the fact that they're thinking that they, it just kind of boggles my mind and makes me a little upset. But I'm going to keep that personal bias, I guess, to myself. But it really does, it does kind of come down to a lot of things. And I think that if moviegoers demand more exclusivity, I think, or the more representation that should be seen, and what happened about, I want to say, 2 or 3 years ago when they actually expanded the selection field to give that chance for more representation. But I will say this, I'm sorry, and this might seem very controversial, but just because you're a woman and you're a director does not mean that you should automatically be nominated because of the fact that you're female. The movie has to be good. The movie has to warrant it. If you stand that movie up against the 10 other things that are already nominated, and it's not as strong as those that are nominated, and it might be because a lot of them are men, I mean, you shouldn't be just shoved in there because you're a female. I know that sounds really controversial, but, and like I said, there has been female directors that I feel have been overlooked and have, they should have been in there. But you can't just say just because it's a girl or a woman that directed this film. I mean, I don't know. That's just my own personal opinion. I'll let that sit there and lie, but that we do need more representation, not only across the board for nationality, but basically for, you know, male and female alike. And not all of them are going to, they can be any kind of, you know, gender representation. It doesn't have to be the best actress or the best actor. It could be, don't even get me started on the topic of representation of the LGBTQ community in Hollywood, because that is a whole nother topic that I'll probably even talk about next time, about how people were really upset about Jared Leto's portrayal in Dallas Buyers Club and the fact that they didn't actually hire a transgender player to represent, or actor to represent that role. And I understand, because I know there is a lot of people out there that would do a really great job in that position should that demark Jared Leto's portrayal of it? No, because he was really, really good. But we should be hiring authentic people in these types of positions if they are, you know, they should be represented. And I do feel like there is kind of an upswing to it. You know, I think that we are kind of getting to that point where we will see more representation because people are demanding it, and we have to demand it. Because if we don't demand it, then things are just going to go on as they usually do, and then we're just going to lose these beautiful roles being represented by actual people that live this life every day, and they don't actually have to act it because that's how they live. And I think that's the most authentic portrayal anyways with any actor, as if that's what could be represented on film. That being said, I'm going to wrap this episode up. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. I will see you guys around. I am starting Lost very soon, so hopefully I can have that wrapped up in a couple of months, because it's a long series. So I will talk to you guys later. Have an awesome night.